Hello, this is Admiral Adama, and I play Edward James Olmos in real life, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi, the best that you can listen to.
This is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Shapiro.
And welcome back to another episode of
Women Talk Sci-Fi.
We are getting better. We've had a little bit of a break. And if you've listened to a few episodes in different orders, you'll find out that our flow had deflowed.
Deflowed wasn't the word for it. It had completely crashed. But we're getting there. So today we're going to talk about a film that has spanned...
A film?
Films. That have spanned a generation.
Or more, in fact. Not only is it films, but it's a series of books, and books that turned a lot of children into readers.
So you probably have guessed what the book is by now, and that is Harry Potter.
It is the Harry Potter series, and we probably haven't talked about Harry Potter before. Can't remember. We have in the past. We've talked about them. She's sitting here nodding her head.
Yes, because we interviewed Percy.
Of course. How can I forget?
Christopher Rankin, yeah.
Our first ever interview ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely ever in the world. Although we did use it later. We did it for another reason, not for our podcast. We did it for a magazine that we happened to do. And if you ever want to see that, it's at www.genews-easing.com. Have a look there. And... yes, we have done a Harry Potter, but this is a few years on.
Quite a few years on, because we've been doing our podcast now for quite a few years on, which is great.
Which is fantastic, and we've been able to talk to different people about the Harry Potter series and probably rewatch the movies a couple of times.
Well, I had to rewatch the movies recently because I went to a Harry Potter quiz. And I figured if I was going to a Harry Potter quiz that I probably should watch the movies and get a little bit better at... some of the trivia that would happen, but I can't beat my friend, our friend Stacey, in
who's a Potterhead.
She's a Potterhead, which is what they're called. Well, they call themselves Potterheads.
And even in this e-zine that we do, she's written articles for us on Harry Potter.
She has, and she's very, very good with her knowledge, and she loves it to death.
No, not her knowledge, her obsession.
That's true. Who are we to talk?
Well, yeah, but she's more obsessed about a few things in Jip. Particular than we are in lots of things. But she is very knowledgeable and is able to tell us lots of things.
She is, but it's amazing.
Did you win the quiz?
Yes, we did.
Oh, good.
It's
what'd you win?
Actually, no, we came second. We came second and we won a hotel voucher.
Fantastic.
For some food, which was really lovely. But we've been to a couple of Harry Potter ones just recently. So Harry Potter's had a big resurgence as far as people coming together.
The new movie.
I think that has a lot to do with it. But for some reason, just at this particular time, it seems to be something that
JK
has brought people together.
Is very well admired in this world.
She is.
I mean, my daughter came home and told me, did you know JK Rowling has come out of the top whatever billionaires list? Because she's given all her money away to charity.
That's right.
And my daughter was in awe that this woman could actually do that. So I think that's why the books are great. They stick in people's heart.
Mm.
And then you've got the author who is a social justice person who's not afraid to give away her money and understands her own, I suppose, luckiness, if you want to use a word that doesn't exist, from where she came to where she is now.
And it certainly has touched a lot of people's lives and made a difference to them in their life.
Well, my children read Harry Potter books. They were hanging out for books and that was fantastic. The fact that I had to go down and pre-order the books so that my children could read them was a fantastic thing. And I had many hours of sitting, reading stories to them, doing the voices. And the Harry Potter series is not afraid to actually look at the bad things in life.
True.
And that is unusual in children's books. She didn't treat children, readers, as people who should be mollycoddled, because life happens is what happens.
Well, just the fact I know my niece is still a huge Harry Potter fan, and when characters died, I mean, she wept for days in some cases, depending on who they were. And that was, I think, is something that was quite unusual too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. JK Rowling didn't treat kids as as living in a cocoon of niceness. Horrible things happen regardless of what you are, where you are, who you are. And I think Harry Potter demonstrated that mm-hmm. very much. I mean, it's your standard old hero's journey.
Oh, definitely.
So the premise of the book, if you want to say that, is not out of the ordinary. It's happened for thousands and thousands of years. You have a person that comes along, they live a hard life, they actually end up being more than what you think they are, and then they save the world. And that's exactly what Harry Potter is. It's just that premise was put together really well. And I have to say that, once again, if we're women talk sci-fi, that the Hermione character in it was a great influence on young women.
Oh, for sure. I mean, who didn't want to be Hermione
at that age?
She was a smart one, and certainly the one that had it all together, even more so than Harry and the others at that particular time.
Well, it's quite funny. If you actually look at Tolkien's The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings,
yep.
and you'll find it in another podcast that we've done, but the character who is secondary to the leader, if you want to, the hero, is in fact the one that supports the hero all the way through. So you have Sam from Lord of the Rings
yep.
doing exactly that as well, and that's who Hermione is.
Mm.
She's the one that holds it up so that it actually comes to fruition at the end, because Harry sometimes was falling apart. It was getting too hard for him.
That's right. And with Fierce Creatures now coming out, and that's going to be...
Which is a lot of fun.
Oh, a huge amount of fun. And we've got another, you know, 3-4 movies to come.
More. Isn't she writing another Harry Potter book?
Oh, who knows?
In a different part of the whole universe.
Oh, it could be, but, you know...
Potterverse, I should say. Shouldn't I say
Potterverse, yes. And we're certainly going to have an influence of J.K. Rowling for quite a number of years to come, even more so.
Well, as each new generation of children come up, I think they, one, get to read the books, and two, then watch the movies all over again. So maybe she'll be able to donate a lot more money to charity.
I'm sure she will. Mm. I'm sure, because she's used... You know, everyone knows the story of J.K. She was a single mother, down on her luck, like really struggling money-wise, had her book rejected upteen number of times.
Aren't they kicking themselves now? Absolutely.
So she knows what hardship is about, and she knows what it means to struggle.
And she knows that she doesn't need millions of dollars to actually live, and she doesn't need a new car every 5 seconds and a new castle. Well, I think she lives in a castle. She lives in a nice house anyway. That kind of thing. She realises that enough is enough and you can spread a bit of love around, if you want to put it that way.
And who doesn't like a little bit of magic and a little bit of hope in the world, you know, that things can be fixed or you can magically time turner. Who doesn't want a time turner so that you can pop round from one place to another and that's
like Hermione, or a TARDIS,
but, you know, with Hermione being in 5 different places
actually,
at once.
I want more than anything a handbag. And I want that tent.
Well,
her handbag and her tent.
Another TARDIS.
Well, except I love those concepts in terms of, I mean, they're not new concepts.
No, they're not.
You have the TARDIS, which is bigger on the inside, exactly what the tent is. And, of course, everybody wants a broom that they can fly around in. That
Absolutely.
Was good. And everybody wants, there's lots of things that could go on. Either flying car, you know.
Not too keen on having the spiders come through, though. They were a bit big.
No, they were a bit big, but...
And who wouldn't like a big cuddly Hagrid? I mean,
Hagrid,
really?
Yeah. No, well, he wasn't one of my favourite characters.
Oh, I liked him.
He was okay.
The gentle giant. I really liked him.
I like McGonagall.
Was good.
She was my favourite. Of the adults.
Yes.
She was definitely... And then Dumbledore came in second in his two versions.
Mm-hmm.
But... It was a really interesting way to use characters. I mean, you could almost take any mythology you want and equate those characters with the roles in the different mythologies all around the world. So there is nothing new in the story.
No, and even the whole thing of the setting is nothing new because British people, authors, have used...
Castles
and boarding schools.
And trains. Well, I remember...
As a natural part of their storytelling.
Well, yeah, I remember when I was a child... reading the Mallory Towers books, and I also read the Susan and the Horsey books, and I almost wanted to go and live in a boarding school because it was such fun to do that. So that's a very much an English tradition in terms of placing the characters away from their parents so they have less control of the situation mm-hmm. in what they live, and they have to usurp authority by sneaking around and doing all this. So it's not an unusual concept for a British novel, particularly with children, particularly from the 40s. So Harry Potter does that. It transcends that sort of generational thing where we had the Enid Blyton books, you know,
yes,
the famous five, if you've never heard of them, the group of children who achieve. And I think Harry Potter does that. It follows on in an updating of that sort of genre.
And I can remember my niece texting me when the last book came out, and she sort of virtually said, my childhood has just come to an end. Because she read her first book when she was 11, and now she was, you know, 20-something, because that's how long those books have taken to come out. And she did feel like she was losing a bit of her childhood, and she had to suddenly become an adult. You know, it was an interesting text from her at that time.
Yeah, it is an interesting concept. I mean, and the thing about the story is that a lot of people grew up with Harry because they physically grew up over the period of the six movies.
Yes, they did.
So they started off as little kids when you first see, and he doesn't look anything like that by the time the last movie. He hasn't grown much, in terms of height, but in terms of character, obviously he grew significantly from that first movie. And even, I know they were very new children. I can remember the horrible hair of Hermione's. When, you know, the really big, it reminded me of my hair when I was a kid.
The curls that couldn't be controlled.
The ringlets with the curls, and it was set out. It mm-hmm. was, like, larger than her shoulders, that kind of thing. And it was very much, I grew up in the UK until a certain age. Well, I grew up in Northern Ireland. And there was a lot in that first movies in particular
yep.
that were very common to my bringing. So even as I was older when I saw them, it was very familiar.
Mm. And growing up, I guess, in Australia where we watched a lot of English shows, it was very familiar to us too. So America,
well, it's the only TV that Australians used to get.
Oh, that's absolutely.
The British television, I mean, that was it. There was very few Australian dramas that were actually made at the time. I think the pomp and ceremony of it would have appealed to Australians, because even though they're not used to, if I can say, that kind of lifestyle, the pomp and ceremony, they do enjoy a bit of.
Well, when they walk into the hall and you see those candles in midair in that great open hall, your breath is taken away. It's an amazing scene.
But see, that's the difference. It is and it isn't. The hall is amazing, but Australians, I think, in particular, are not used to big halls like that.
No, we're not.
Because the buildings are not that big, believe me, in Australia. We're over in the UK. Buildings such as those would have been normalised.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Oxbridge.
True.
Kind of thing where they have those big castles, the big churches, the big all
Cambridge.
Of those things. Westminster and so on and so forth. So that's the Oxford and Cambridge kind of thing. And you saw lots of television shows that were actually made in those things. And they were always on the television and news and whatever. So I think for Australians that would have been a wow.
Well, it was. It is. And it still is. Yeah. All those sorts of things still are, because we're just not used to seeing them in real life. So when we do actually see them on the screen, or we do eventually get over to see them in real life,
it's
blown away.
It's quite awe-inspiring, yes. As I said, it alluded back to all of those books that I read as a child, the Mallory Towers and all of those kind of things. And it was a cross between nostalgia. I love the way they represented things like Diagon Alley and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So that was very much that nostalgia of the 1940s that you see, or even all the way back to Jack the Ripper kind of streets.
True.
That kind of thing. But it was also quite very modern in its aspect and future-looking, because you could see newspapers that had figures on it. So it reminded you of technology that
the holographic type figures that they had in the newspapers that moved, and things that were quite advanced compared to what we even know now.
So she was able to bridge many eras of what she wanted to represent.
And did it very successfully.
Amazingly successfully.
Mm.
Every movie was wanted. It was not just, oh, there's another Harry Potter movie coming, I have to go see it so I don't miss out. Everyone was anticipated, so it was never tired or old. You knew there was going to be six movies. You just didn't want them to take that long to come out because you wanted to see them now.
Well, seven movies, because the last one was two.
And it was almost like a British retirement home for older actors, wasn't it?
That's true. It's amazing. It's, the people who are upset are the ones that haven't been in Harry Potter.
Absolutely, because just about every British actor that you could see, of significance anyway, has been in Harry Potter. Actually, the only one that hasn't is Judy Dench. I don't think she was in it.
No, she was never in it. So, of course, you've got Maggie Smith, you've got Dawn French, you've got John Cleese. They're just the ones that come to mind.
I mean, all of the others. I mean,
Robbie Coltrane.
Well, you've also got all the icons. Very
Emma Thompson, yes.
And so on.
And the one who played Professor Sprout. Oh, she now lives in Australia.
Oh, Miriam.
Yes.
Margolis.
Yes.
It's interesting, lovely. I'd love to interview her.
Oh,
one day.
Wouldn't she be amazing?
Just amazing. And. But that's not all. I mean, if you go into IMDb and look at every character actor
True.
Who's ever been
David
in
Tennant.
It. David Tennant's been in it. You've got...
Robert Pattinson.
There's even Sir Kenneth Branagh. Never mind 345 million other British actors. Well, they've turned the studios, didn't they? Haven't they, into a Harry Potter experience?
They do.
Now?
Yeah, they have. And
there's a Harry Potter ride in America?
There's a Harry Potter world in America.
I mean, that's how many of those movies have actually been turned into those things. Not many. And it is iconic and it is quite fun. But it is a generic story that's been told a million times.
And hopefully, and I think it will, I think it's one of those stories that's going to last, that people will pick up every now and again and they'll go and revisit the movies and generation after generation will actually see them.
Well, I have the audio books as well as my kids have the paper books. And I've listened to it more than once. It's those kind of stories that you can enjoy again and again. And particularly if you've listened to it once, you don't have to listen as in depth again, but you can enjoy being in the world of the characters once more. I'd like to see more Harry Potter. I would.
Well, we are in a way. With fierce creatures, we
yeah,
are.
But, I mean, Harry Potter, I'd like to know if it's the end of it, or does he do more? Does he have a boring life now working in the ministry? Or is there more excitement out there?
Well, certainly if you go into fan fiction...
Well,
there's lots of different things that have happened to Harry.
Well,
and the other characters.
Lots of things that Harry's done to other characters as well, so as there always is. I do think that I could actually watch another Harry Potter and see something. I mean, you could have the Death Eaters come back and Harry Potter has to defeat them all over again. I mean, it ended at a good point, but quite an abrupt point.
It did, but I think that's part of the charm too, because it spurs on the imagination of people what happens next or what is still to happen. And there's all that talk about this and that. I mean, it's quite interesting listening to Stacey because she's now
you
joined...
You have to tell her to listen to this podcast.
I will have to tell her.
Mention a whole pile of times
but
that
she's
in it.
She's joined a Harry Potter group and, of course, they meet together. Yeah.
I suppose we did the same as Star Trek.
We did. I can't say anything at all.
No, not at all.
And... that's the sort of thing that they're talking about, and certainly for her, fan fiction is the way that keeps Harry Potter alive as well
mm-hmm.
because of all the possibilities and all people putting in their own imagination of what happens to some of these characters and even minor characters and what happens to them, you know, the ones that you only hear about.
I don't think she could leave the world, really, can she? I mean, I think she's invested a large part of her life
Rowling
into Harry Potter.
Definitely, and I think people won't let her... just leave
it alone.
I don't
think she wants to. I think she has to come back to it. Because it was significant in her life. It changed her life in ways that are unimaginable to her
True.
At the time.
Yes.
And it's given her lots of opportunity. It's given her ability to do good things in the world. And I think sometimes that's too hard to lose. And when you've imagined a world so defined, you could probably think of lots of things that are actually happening to other people in it. There's another series of books which are popular, but not quite as popular as Harry Potter, and they're called the Wheel of Time books.
Yes.
And it's as complicated a story, if not more so than Harry Potter. And you could see that the author lived in that world, and he could create storylines of 415 million people that lived in it. I think J.K. does that a bit more as well. She's really in that world. It's almost like she has two existences, you know, in the real world and in the Potter world. And I don't think she'll stop ever writing something about Harry Potter world.
Well, I think there's plays in that coming out as well.
Well, there's
there,
a play already out.
That she's
it's
written.
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, of which I do have the book around the corner. So Of course. And she's written other books, like the Fantastic Beasts books, and she's the Rules of Quidditch book and all those other books. I think she's the New Age Terry Pratchett.
True.
Where
yes.
Terry lived in his Discworld universe, and I think J.K. lives in her Harry Potter universe. But it's good.
Oh, it's great.
It provides us entertainment.
Definitely. And it provides us with two lovely guests that we interviewed as well.
It does. I forgot about them. And I think it's the Harry Potter world is so fast. It does take a lot of thinking about. And the two people are...
Well, the first one's Robbie Jarvis, who played the young Harry Potter, well, one of the young Harry Potters.
Well, there's many variations over the ages, yes.
And our second guest is the one who played Victor.
Victor Krum.
Yes, the very handsome Victor Krum. And his name is Stanislav Yanevsky.
Which is a bit hard to say if you're not into Slavic languages.
Which I am, which you'd think that I should be able to do it pretty well.
Yeah, but there we go. Who's a Bulgarian actor who was given the opportunity to obviously play a character who stood out significantly.
He did in that particular film, that's for sure.
And I mean, he was mentioned lots of times in other movies. He was Harry Krum was, a Quidditch player of some renown. So he did actually appear in that. And he's a lot older than what you thought he was, isn't he? I mean,
that's
the thing that you don't realise, that half these actors are almost twice the age of what they played. Obviously, Bulgarian air is good for the skin.
And we have Oz Comic Con to thank for Robbie Jarvis. And you can find Oz Comic Con on ozcomiccon.com. And our interview with Stanislav comes from supernova.com.au.
And let's not forget Lionel from lionelmedfordpublicity.com, who is our favourite publicist.
So here's Robbie and then followed by Stanislav. Robbie, really nice to have you back in Australia again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to be back.
Is this your second time now?
Yeah, this is the second time. Last time I was in Melbourne. We did Brisbane last week and now Sydney now.
So you've got to see a little bit of the countryside.
Yeah, we've done a bit of it. Sydney's amazing. Sydney's incredible. I love Sydney. There's so many places to go. I'm a vegan, so there's tons of things to eat here, which, Australia is sort of a pretty carnivorous kind of a place. So I thought we weren't going to have much in the way.
We like to eat our emblems.
Absolutely. Although you say that, last time I was in Melbourne, there was a kangaroo that escaped in the pharmacy there, mm-hmm. and it shut down the Melbourne airport. Don't medicate your kangaroos, I think, would be the moral to take away from the story. But yeah, they wouldn't shoot it and eat it. They were trying to shoo him outside and make sure he was safe. So,
oh, yeah, there's only certain ones that...
Right, yeah.
They need to be cultivated.
Right. He wasn't properly tenderised. He wasn't ready. It's an amazing place to come. And it's so... It's such a different kind of a culture in some ways from England,
mm-hmm.
but in the same ways there are certain things which are kind of ubiquitous between the two nations,
yeah, so you
because
feel
of our heritage.
Familiar and
yeah. I'd feel even happier to be honest if we hadn't lost this morning in the rugby. That would have that put a slight dampener on my morning. But yeah, otherwise everything's going well.
We've been running the podcast since 2009.
Great.
And our first podcast was actually J.J. Abrams.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's really cool.
We've been doing it for a while. But we do it for fun.
Yeah,
I'm not doing it for a business or anything.
Yeah, but it's such a cool thing. Like, sci-fi traditionally has been such a male-dominated kind of an environment. But why? There are such amazing female role models in it. And, my family are Star Trek fans, so we watch Voyager, and obviously you've got Catherine Janeway, and now she's in Orange Is the New Black.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just such a... there are so many crossovers in it, and it's an opportunity. Kind of some of the most progressive writing you get is actually from science fiction writers, because they can go, this isn't the real world, you don't have to panic, misogynists out there. We can take stuff and put it somewhere else, and you can wrap your head around it that way. It's great. It's a wicked way to change the
story. How did you get involved in Harry Potter? Because of your love of fantasy sci-fi?
I mean, we had it introduced to us by mum, really, when we were sort of that age. And I already knew I wanted to be an actor, and I was already working along those lines. Sort of, I started in theatre in London. But at the back of my mind, part of the reason why I started on the trajectory that I started on, that particular trajectory. I chose an agent because they had some characters in Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, it was sort of, I knew I was going to be an actor with the rest of my career, but the immediate goal was to figure out some way of shoehorning myself into this franchise that I adore, that I love. So we got a phone call. I actually wrote and said I'd like to be Cedric, please, to David Heyman, and he wrote back and said, thank you very much, we've already got Cedric. So he said, we'll keep you in mind when we get to order. And yeah, they contacted my agent at the time, and I was one of the only sort of kids that kind of had acting experience already. So I had an agent, and I kind of went through that. And then by the time I found out that they wanted me to play James, I was already working on another project with some very hard-working, sort of absolutely traditional English actors. We were doing a theatre show which no one came to see. And I remember that morning of rehearsal, bouncing in and going, guys. I'm going to be in Harry Potter. And they're all sort of in their 40s and 50s, and they've been toiling away for their lives as struggling artists, and they have no idea how they didn't swing for me, because I must have been sickeningly enthusiastic that morning. But yeah, so that was sort of my introduction into the Harry Potter universe, really.
And it has become quite a bit of a ride for you, hasn't it? You've been to different countries.
We get to travel a lot. Well, that's really because of the fans. I mean, because, well, it's sort of six of one and half a dozen of the other. It's half because of the fans and half because of the stories, because the stories are so great, so the fans get that invested. And then the fans are that invested that now we have more movies and more projects which are coming out. Because J.K. Rowling, of course, turned the Magical Beasts into Fantastic Beasts into the movie.
Yes.
So she took an add-on to the universe, which she made into a kind of encyclopedia, and then reverse engineered that. She then wrote the stories which went into making the encyclopedia, and now we're going to have that as a movie. So yeah, it's amazing. It's all because of the fans and the passion that people have for the universe, I think. So yeah, we're very lucky. We get to travel around and meet amazing Harry Potter fans and have incredible experiences and really sort of share our fandom with them.
Does it sometimes stop you from getting parts because you've been in Harry Potter?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I guess if they don't want to see me because of that, then that's their choice and they never meet me. No, I don't think... See, this is funny. I don't think anything, any kind of work experience can ever sort of stunt you or halt you as an actor. I think the only way it sometimes has an effect on you is through your friends or your family. They start to perceive things a little bit differently, whereas for us it's just a job. You do the job, and as amazing as they are, as soon as that one's done, you're kind of on to the next one. But sometimes you still do still I have friends who haven't quite wrapped their head around the fact that I'm probably never going to do anything as big as Harry Potter anymore. So when I say, oh yeah, we've just filmed a movie, oh great, you know, assuming it's going to be Harry Potter again, whereas there is only one of those. So yeah, I don't think for us, I think you very quickly realise it is a job. Because if you did kind of walk around with your head in the clouds, then you'd come back down to earth very, very fast anyway. So, yeah, it's a job, but this side of things, sort of getting to meet fans, getting to travel, getting to go to conventions and events all over the world, that's the kind of ancillary bit. That's the really funny bit that you don't normally get to do with most work.
That's right. I'm just thinking, as an actor, you don't usually get to meet the people who have been watching the movies or seeing you in other
things.
Exactly,
yeah. That's really the big difference between this particular job and most filming. Theatre, you get that. You get that sort of constant feedback with the audience. It's almost a dialogue with them every night. You can tell if something's working, or you can tell if they're a little restless or perhaps not listening quite as much as other audiences have, and you can kind of play off them. Whereas with screen, the big difference is that you're not performing to anyone. You're just existing. You're just being there, and the camera happens to be catching that. So because you're not performing, you don't have an audience. That never exists. So it's only later, when you get to do these kinds of things, you get to meet people. If people are interested in your work, then you actually get to have a real genuine feedback. Yeah, it's why it's a very odd kind of art.
Was it something you were ready for?
That's a really good question. I don't know if I was any more ready than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way filmmaking works is they take enough off your plate so that you don't have to worry about that too much. I think so long as you just focus on your thing, everything else just kind of happens, and it all kind of comes together around you, rather than someone, say, who's a writer, who creates the world, imagines the world themselves. Everything is very much on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
We have people there. We do our little bit, our tiny role in this enormous machine. And then the machine itself sort of it has this momentum that takes itself forward, so you don't really have to worry about that. It was certainly something which I didn't necessarily assimilate all of the experiences in real time.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely had a decompressing later that kind of happened.
Did you find that you now have become quite knowledgeable about every aspect of Harry Potter?
Because
of the questions you get asked?
Yeah, you do. You do have to occasionally go, oh, I really need to brush up, I really need to... But in all honesty, there are fans out there as dedicated as I was and she was as fans beforehand,
mm-hmm.
because I was a huge Harry Potter fan. I mean, I actually found myself during my exams, I would treat myself by getting to write some fan fiction. I'd sort of do hours of revising, and then I'd do some... Well, my mother's an author, Neil Gaiman, the writer Neil Gaiman.
Yes, I know Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, of course. He said he sees... fan fiction is a sandbox for writers because it allows you to play with someone else's characters, but mm-hmm. you can take them somewhere else. So I used to want to write. I was very, very keen on that. So that was the way I got through my exams. I'd do 4 hours revising and then 1 hour fan fictioning. So I was a big, big fan, but there are always those who are greater and lesser than yourself, so you will always meet people who are even bigger fans than you ever could have been, and they will ask you questions to which you don't know the answer, and you just have to say, I'm sorry, I've forgotten, I'm not with that. So hopefully they're generous and kind and they'll forgive us.
So is writing something you'd like to continue?
Absolutely, yeah. It's something I do, actually. I've been fortunate enough already to work with some incredible writers, from whom I am encouraged to steal and take and seize as many opportunities to kind of soak up that creativity. I would like one day to get to the point where I can just focus on that, but at mm-hmm. the moment, obviously, acting's one of those things that you're sort of the only hamster in that wheel.
Yes.
If you stop pushing it, there isn't a team of people out there that are kind of carrying on the earning the money. It's you and you alone, really. So... I was given the best piece of advice I was given regarding writing was by a playwright I work with, and he said, write about something that fascinates you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already dabbling, I'm already kind of playing with ideas that I'm interested in, and I think I'm sort of forming things which I want to explore and expand and imagine and discuss throughout my work, hopefully in years to come. So yeah, I think I've done the start of it. I've done the first bit, which is figuring out what interests me.
So which genre is it going to tackle? Is it fantasy? Is it real life?
That's a fun thing. I think actually, I can explain a little bit. The ideas, I was raised, my parents separated when I was very young, and so I was raised by my mother, who is Superwoman. I tell people I had a mum and a dad, they just happened to be the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested in the effect on boys, particularly through adolescence, if they don't have a male role model, don't have a father.
Yeah.
So the fun thing about it is I've already written a screenplay, part of a play, and a series of poems. I have a couple of essays which I've done on the same subject, and they can take almost any form.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need to lock it into one genre, because that is the kind of universal conversation, particularly within modern society when divorce is so prevalent and we have so many children being raised. In England alone, a third of all children are being raised by one biological parent, and of those, over 90% are female. So it's such a huge thing.
It is.
We're going to have, in generations to come, we're going to have generations of men that were just raised by women, who have no idea what a woman is outside of a mother or perhaps a school teacher. And so it's a conversation, it's an idea that I find fascinating. And that concept of male development and how you can take that and where that's going to go. I don't know, I'd like to think one day it'll end up in sci-fi, because of course that was a huge passion within our family when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna need some fleshing out. I'm gonna need to sort of hide the wires and the strings of it, you know.
Well, the good thing about sci-fi, which you would have seen, is that you can tackle issues
exactly
that sometimes you can't do with real-life drama.
Exactly, which I think, I was raised by feminists. I think of myself as a feminist, and that's why I think sometimes some of the best feminist work comes through sci-fi or fantasy,
mm-hmm.
because you can take it just far enough away from modern culture that people can totally identify with and make it safe.
Yes.
You can take it to somewhere where people can go, oh, okay, this is set in space, so I'm fine to talk about strong female role models, you know. Which
exactly.
We will get to the point, I think, where it won't be so much of an issue. You can set those. I mean, we're already getting there in shows like Orange is the New Black. We're already getting to the point where people will happily sit down for an hour and watch a show in which they don't see any men,
mm-hmm.
or at least any strong male role models, which is a great thing, which we should be able to have. But I think certainly in the same way that fan fiction is a sandbox, I think it can also be sort of a societal sandbox. You know, we can kind of put people in safe places and go, well, here you go. This is something that you can play with without getting offended by it.
So do you have a writer that you like reading, an author?
Yeah, I mean, we grew up as Terry Pratchett fans as kids.
A very politically standing novels as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, really astute. That was the thing, sort of. There is a writer that would always sort of thread in his humour and his politics into his writing, but it would be just far enough away that you could go, no, it's not what you think it is.
Yep.
You know, you can take it on many different levels. I got very heavily invested in the George R. R. Martin Game of Thrones because of the TV series. I was auditioning for the TV series, and so I got really fairly deep into that as well. I mean, any kind of sci-fi, sort of, you know, we had everything. We sort of grew up as kids on Star Trek. Kind of that was our sort of evening viewing most evenings. And it's one of those things. I think if you are encouraged to imagine as a child, you take that gift with you everywhere, that kind
mm-hmm.
of imagination, it comes with you all over the place. So, I'm sort of down to read anything that's fun. And obviously as an actor, you're given so many scripts and so many opportunities to write and to read new work. My favourite movie is a film called Gattaca.
Oh, fantastic.
Which,
yes.
The writer wrote another script which I got to audition for, and I couldn't stop myself. You know, this is incredible. It's a man who wrote Gattaca. So, yeah, it's one of those things. You get to a point where if you're lucky enough, then you get to work with people that inspire you, just Whedon and people like that. You get to kind of take things in. Yeah, Buffy, of course.
Fantastic.
Yeah, which, Sarah Michelle Gellar adorned my teenage bedroom walls many, many years, in fact, embarrassingly long. So sci-fi has always been a passion and will always be probably what I return to. So, you know, when I need to decompress or want to relax or want to be challenged.
I've been given the wind-up, so
okay.
I would have loved to have kept talking with you,
Well,
Robbie.
It was lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thank you so much.
Now, if you two don't mind, I'm going to bed before either of you come up with another clever idea to get us killed, or worse, expelled.
Welcome to Australia, Stan.
Thank you.
So how does someone from Bulgaria end up in a Harry Potter film?
Well, I actually was picked when I was in school in England. So, although I'm from Bulgaria, you know, it happened in England, so London was the place.
So, how long did you go to school in England for?
5.5 years.
So you went to boarding school?
Yep. Boarding school, I became head boy.
Yeah?
I mean, head of house, not head boy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was a good student.
Is that because you wanted to go somewhere else, do university or something like that?
No, my dad just said, you know, you're off to England to go to study, and I was like, all right.
So what age were you when you left Bulgaria?
13.
13? And I don't know my history dates that well. Was that still during the Eastern Bloc? Or had when we had Eastern Europe and it was a lot harder to move across borders?
No. It was before before Bulgaria joined the European Union. It was, yeah. But then a couple of years after that, we joined, so things became easier.
So, going to England, did you speak English at the time, or did you have to...
I did, yeah. Well, not as well as now, but I did speak English.
And did you plan to be an actor when you went there?
No.
So what happened?
What happened was we were playing computer games.
Yeah?
During one of the big breaks, lunch break. And I was late for an afternoon registration. And I was walking with a friend through the main hall of the school. And we were thinking of what to write in the book for excuse. And what happened was one of the casting agents, she was there at the same time and she saw me and she said, oh, I need to speak to you. And they said she was with the head of drama and they said you have to come to a casting later on in the same day. I was like, all right. I went in my gym clothes, you know, just normal school. And I did a casting there and she called me to do two more, which I couldn't go to because they wouldn't let me out of school. And they sent me a car, picked me up, drove me to the director. That's how it happened. A week later, you know, I get a call. Yeah, we'd like you to play the part. And I was like, all right. I had no idea what I was getting into.
So when you got on set, like, it's such an epic series. Harry Potter is the biggest grossing series of any movie for whatever. What was it like going into a world of acting with no experience? Was it scary? Was it exciting?
No, the thing with me is I've always been a perfectionist. And I always wanted to prove to Mike Newell that he'd made the best decision for the role. Because, you know, he did take a big risk. Taking someone, you know, just because he thought he would be a great Victor Crumb. I had no acting experience, I came from Bulgaria, you know, and then I always wanted to prove that, you know, I could live up to his standards, to his vision. I think I managed anyway.
And you did a little bit of wire work, didn't you, when you were flying on the broomsticks? Was that hard, easy? Did you know, it's quite exciting to fly through the air.
Well, it was very exciting and extremely painful. I mean, if you're a guy, you would understand. Yeah, very painful, actually. You know, after the third hour, you'd have some difficulties after that.
So, because everything would have been quite amazing to walk in, never looked at it, never even considered acting before, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just, as we say, a chance came by and I took it.
So what are you doing now?
Well, I've kept on acting as much as I can. I go to the gym, I work out. You know, I'm working towards, like, an action film. I really want to be, you know, part of that.
So you're back in Bulgaria and working through the film industry that way, or going to Hollywood?
Well, I'm more in Europe, but I've got an agent and, you know, I'm working with a big, big agency that's worldwide, so... you know, there are castings here and there, and just try. It's a difficult world.
Mm. So you got the bug, basically.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what you... What did you want to be before you wanted to be an actor?
Well, I was studying economics and business, so a businessman, obviously.
Completely different side of the coin.
Yeah, absolutely different.
We've just had the wind-up stand, so we need to finish the interview, but...
All right.
Thank you very, very much for your time and all the best for your career.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Melalee. I play Yuki Cross in Vampire Knight, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Well, Eugenie, I hope everyone enjoyed those two interviews from Harry Potter World.
I'm sure they did, because...
We did. Well, we enjoy every interview we actually do.
We do indeed. And it's really... quite lovely, even though they are only minor characters as such, it's still wonderful to be able to talk to these people and see how they got involved in that particular film.
Or the particular way of life or what's passionate about them. All of the things about being human that we like to hear. Sometimes it's gossip, sometimes it's not, but we like it all.
Definitely. So, see you, Jerry.
You're not going to say...
All right, it's good night from me.
And it's good night from her.
Good night.
Bye.